Welcome to the class. I'm glad you're all here. So when I was, I don't remember how old I was. I know I was old enough to know better. But, well, first of all, how many of you remember the last spanking that you got from your parents? For some reason in my mind, this sticks. And I don't remember how old I was. But I do know that I was helping my mom fold laundry. I don't remember even if any of my siblings were there or not. But I was acting really childish about something, and I got spanking. And I think I was maybe 12, or I was old enough to know better. Fast forward a few years, and I was driving through town with one of my friends in the passenger seat, and just going about my normal duties or whatever, and I just had gone through a stoplight, and all of a sudden I saw flashing lights behind me, so I pulled off to the side. I figured they're going to go around me, and he pulls in behind me, and I'm like, what in the world? What happened? What did I do? And I came to find out that my license plates were expired. And it was quite an experience. I hadn't had that happen before, so I was giving him the wrong documents, and it worked out okay. But the point of those stories is that I was answering to somebody there in those situations. By the way, these questions on the board, if you have answers to them at the end, well, they're not connected to the class. They're just random. So don't let me forget to give you the answers at the end. I don't know what comes to your mind when you hear this thing of, to whom do you answer? So that's part of why I put down on your paper there, I wondered what comes to your mind when you hear that? Who do you answer to? Anybody?
Ultimately
to God.
We answer to our students.
To our students, yes.
Church.
Parents of students.
Parents of students.
Members.
Board members. Yes. The list could really go on and on and on. And the fact of the matter is that no matter what stage of life we're in, we still have people in authority over us that we answer to. Always. A verse in Matthew 12 says, "But I say unto you that every idle word that man shall speak, he shall give account thereof in the day of judgment." We answer for our words. Another verse in Matthew says, "But whoso shall offend one of these little ones which believe in me, it were better for him that a millstone were hanged about his neck and that he were drowned in the depths of the sea." So we answer for how we treat children, how we teach them. We know that Adam and Eve really failed in this thing of realizing who they answered to. They didn't think about who they were answering to and the effects it would have. They forgot that God was watching and He would require them to explain what they had done. What do you think Ananias and Sapphira would say if they were here today and we asked them if they answer to somebody? They also discovered in a very dramatic way that there was some power that they answered to that they didn't think about before. Jesus, we heard about Him this morning. He's our perfect example in everything, and it was clear in His ministry that He answered to His Heavenly Father. He told Mary and Joseph that He has to be about His Father's business, and He also says in John 6:38, He said, "For I came down from heaven not to do mine own will, but the will of Him that sent me." And for me, that's Jesus being God and yet being the Son and submitting to the Father, it's kind of a muddle in my mind how that can all work. But that's how it was, and Jesus is our perfect example there. We're going to divide this up into two parts. The first part is going to be talking about some questions that we may be asked as teachers, whether literal questions or more figurative questions. And then we're also going to talk about the practical side, hopefully. As the description of the class puts it, the interweaving of relationships among parents, boards, and teachers, which is a very good way to say it. So, the title of the workshop is, "To Whom Do You Answer?" So if you're answering something, there obviously has to be a question that was asked to you. You're answering the question in some way. And so I put a spot down on the paper for you to write down questions that come to your mind that a teacher may be asked. And I don't know if your mind will go the same way mine did, but what did you think of? Any questions that teachers would be asked? And this could be something that somebody might come up to you and ask you the question, or it could more just be a question that is kind of understood. I'll listen to your responses and then I'll be able to tell if I'm being clear or not.
Different congregation than your own.
Right.
They might ask you what your relationship is with your home congregation.
Right. What is your relationship with your home congregation? Yes, that definitely would be a question you could receive.
So are you thinking in terms of like if you're being interviewed, become a teacher?
Could be that.
Once you're already a teacher.
Either one.
Okay.
Either one.
And also I think that you can ask our teachers, if I'm not a teacher, but just on board, is, you know, how do you plan to conduct your classroom?
Mm-hmm.
What kind of order are you
mm-hmm.
looking to establish?
Mm-hmm.
That's a big thing for...
Right.
And, you know, school cultures vary.
What kind of order will there be? Mm-hmm. Good. What else?
Why do you do it that way?
Why do you do it that way? Well, because I'm right, and I'm the teacher. Duh. What else? It was already mentioned that we ultimately answer to God. And one day, I will stand before God, and He will ask me, I don't know what he's going to ask me, but the gist of the question will be, how did you treat these souls that I entrusted into your care for however many years you had the privilege of doing that? And that question should grip us like no other question. When it's serious, really, really serious, the opportunity we have is unparalleled, really, to influence our students in a way, either positive or negative. And God will require us to answer for that. The parents of your students may ask, they might not ask this question to your face, but the question is this: are you living a life of integrity, a life that can be a pattern for my children to follow? This thing of somebody give me a definition of integrity.
What you do when no one's watching.
What you do when no one is watching. I like that definition. Driving is a classic example. The way we talk, the music we listen to, the books we read, the places we go when we're in town by ourselves, they're all connected with this whole thing of integrity. And I've come to the conclusion that in my life, if I'm demanding respect from and obedience from my students, and then I go out and drive faster than the speed limit, and I read filthy books, read bad books, and I say bad words when I don't think anybody's listening, watch movies on the sly so nobody finds out, I'm wasting my time. Wasting my time. You've probably heard this before, but it's been said that teachers live in glass houses, and everything you do is looked at, scrutinized, picked apart. And it can be a little frustrating sometimes. But if you're not comfortable with that, well, then I would just recommend spending time with God till you are comfortable with it, because that's just the way it is. And for me personally, that's a really strong motivator to keep myself following God like I should. And it's not really something that you can get away from. Another question that we might be asked as teachers, this could come from the school board, and is a question like this: are you ready to commit to this job and realize that there will be activities you must give up in order to perform all the duties we ask of you? The opportunities we have in our day and age are just amazing. There's so many things that can be done. You can go to this work project, go to this Bible school, go to this wedding, go to this funeral. There's just stuff all the time. And I'm not going to make a blanket statement, because I know things can be worked out for teachers to be gone for periods of time. But again, in my mind, it comes back to this thing of example. And if you've taught, you know how it feels when there's a student that's gone a lot, and it's really tough to keep them up with the work, and it's just frustrating. And so if we're struggling with that and then we are larking off for 2 weeks here and for 3 days there, and it, I don't think it looks good from the student's perspective. It could feel to them like I'm giving less of myself than I should be. Any other questions that came to your mind that we may be asked as teachers? Yeah, for school board, please say what questions you would ask teachers when you're considering them as possible workers. Have you done it?
Where am I going to use
this? Yes.
It
does. Right.
This kind of might go along with the integrity thing, but I think depending on how disciplined we are in our own personal lives and the how we run our classroom,
how disciplined are you? Can step on my toes pretty fast, but it's important.
One thing that I think is so important in the teachers is, you know, the discipline that they find themselves under. Or if we're hiring teachers that are not disciplined, and trickle down into the children, they'll, you know, more talk than talk, and they know.
Right.
Without even saying a word what your personal life probably is.
Right.
They're with you every day. So it's important that, like you said, that we have a connection with God.
Yeah. And they sometimes see stuff that you don't even think about. So yeah, the title asks a question, and I think we're clear on this thing, that we answer to a lot of people. We answer to, among others, the parents, the school board, the church, to our students, to God. The list could go on. So now we're going to try to talk about some practical scenarios, and I want to, if you have something that you've experienced in your teaching or in relating to teachers that you weren't quite sure where, how you were supposed to interweave the different facets, be ready with that. But sometimes, to me, it feels like we're in a kind of a unique position of authority because we're not the parent, we're not the school board, and yet we're expected to have authority over these students. So I don't know if any of you have ever experienced this, but you're on a school outing with everybody, and the school board chairman is along, and there are some parents with, and one of your students is misbehaving and you're not quite sure whose responsibility it is to take care of it. That, we're not going to really talk specifically about that, but that comes up sometimes. And how are you supposed to interweave? Am I supposed to take care of it? Is the chairman going to take care of it? Is the dad? How is that supposed to be? So, I'm going to present some scenarios to you, and after I've presented the scenario, I would like to hear your feedback on what you feel would be an appropriate response in this case. These are all written in the first person, but that does not mean that I've experienced all this stuff, and some of them I've exaggerated a little bit for the purpose of this class. So, scenario one. I decide partway through the school year that my students would enjoy doing something together outside the classroom, so I talk to the parents and we decide that they're all fine with me taking them to the park after school on Friday. Get a van there after school is dismissed. We all pile in the van, we go to the park, we enjoy the afternoon playing games, have supper together there, and I sure enjoyed it. I'm feeling pretty good about my pleasing my students, and the students all seem to have a fun time. But then the next day my phone rings and one of my school board members informs me that the school policy has more been, in that case, that another couple needs to go along. It shouldn't just be me taking the students by myself to the park. so, my bubble kind of gets popped a little bit. What should I do? How am I as a teacher? What do you think? How should I respond in that situation? Or you can maybe give personal experience on how you have responded, whether it was good or bad.
Apologize to the school board member. I don't know, it might be necessary to apologize to the parents.
Mm-hmm. Apologize,
they,
yes.
They realize it was against the rules.
Mm-hmm. Good.
The students enjoy it, so
yeah.
You don't need to apologize.
Okay, good. What else would be appropriate to do? Because remember, we're trying to think how we can interweave our relationships so that we can have a positive impact on the school that we're in.
I think that's one thing that's there at school. With my wife and I, it sounds like very recently that somebody kind of told us, that, hey, you're really transgressing here.
Mm-hmm.
Basically what they told us. We felt like we were innocent.
Uh-huh.
So we're visiting with somebody about it, and that man told us, he said, you know, he said, you can just tell them that, hey, we didn't realize it. It's our desire to, you know, do what we're supposed to do.
Mm-hmm.
And basically, it's to express a willingness to correct the
right.
Problem.
Mm-hmm. And that'll be felt. They'll be able, the school board and the parents will be able to tell if you're trying to push your own agenda or if you're doing it grudgingly or not. Good. Any more?
There may be times in that situation to try to justify what you did, but when it comes right down to it, if it was something that wasn't according to school policy,
mm-hmm.
then the best response, like Sharon, is just share that, you know, and then apologize and try to move forward in the correct way the next time.
Right.
Because there are a few things that are solved by trying to justify our actions when we're in the wrong.
Right. Thank you. More thoughts on that one?
Probably the next school day after that event, it might just be good to mention to the students that I shouldn't have done that.
Right.
Yeah. We won't do that in the future.
Right.
I didn't realize it was against the policy.
Right.
Something just so they know and they won't. They're not going to do that.
Yeah. And that it's good for them to hear teachers apologize or at least say things like that, because you expect a lot out of your students, and if you don't expect the same out of yourself, it's kind of inconsistent in my mind. Okay, the next scenario. I've been teaching now for several years and I feel like there could be some improvements made to the curriculum in the school that we're in. I feel like as a teacher I have had a little bit of experience, and so I should have some say in how we decide what curriculum to use and whether we're going to change it or not. So I bring the subject up at a school board meeting and nothing's decided. The chairman does say that they'll discuss it later. I find out later that they decided it without me present, that we're going to keep it the way it was. And I struggle with that. I feel like my school board is living kind of in the past, and they're not allowing things to change in our school to keep pace with the changing world that we live in. How am I supposed to react to that?
So did you present another curriculum to them as a suggestion? Is that part of that scenario?
I did not write that down as part of the scenario, but it could be.
We just need to carry on with the old curriculum.
Yeah, so it's probably not to react.
Not to react.
And just apply that nasty S word.
Right. even after lots of years, you still have problems reacting?
Yeah.
Oh, that is so depressing. But submit, yeah. Any more thoughts on that one?
I've seen some scenarios in our school, kind of not necessarily that like whole curriculum thing, but where you have a teacher out or something.
Mm-hmm.
It goes for years or whatever, gets any answer or whatever, or maybe doesn't ever get answered at all.
Mm-hmm.
Or I've also seen where, yeah, the teacher keeps pushing for something.
And it
does not bring about respect
for that teacher before. And for, I don't know, people are very respectful of your ability to keep your best
Right.
Keep going. Mm-hmm.
Modern nature
of doing it. One thing I think I have to continually remind myself is that I'm kind of like an employee here.
Mm-hmm.
Believe it or not. I mean, sometimes we, they would say, hey, I'm in this every day.
Right.
I know what's going on here.
Yeah.
When I'm just this young guy who doesn't.
Right.
I don't have the understanding
mm-hmm.
that board members have, even if they're on doing their
mm-hmm.
other jobs.
Mm-hmm.
I still have a lot of understanding.
Mm-hmm.
And it's been kind of hard for me sometimes to remember that I am an employee here.
Right. Right.
I have more bosses than most employees have.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
Well, I think if it's an issue from the board's perspective, if the teacher feels like there's some things being missed,
mm-hmm.
I think that would be probably a completely different thing. That if the teacher is suggesting something that they feel the students are missing that's
right.
very important, that would be one side, and then if the teachers are using a certain curriculum that has been working,
mm-hmm.
but I'm still not opposed to teachers at least bringing it up. Now, constantly be doing that might be a problem, but
mm-hmm.
I think if our teachers are in the classroom every day,
mm-hmm.
they see things that we board don't see.
Right.
So I think there would be some room for suggestions,
mm-hmm.
curriculum changes,
right.
and whatnot. I think there's a proper way to work through that.
Mm-hmm.
Teacher.
Yeah. Good. Thank you for those. Third scenario. Students get to school on Tuesday morning. The day goes as normal. First recess comes and you're out on the playground playing volleyball, whatever game you play with your students. And one of your boys is talking and he's like, yeah, last night my dad was talking to me about the presidents of the United States that have been assassinated. And there were three of them. Abraham Lincoln, James Garfield, and John F. Kennedy. And you're participating in this game and helping the students play and enjoying being with them, but you know that he missed one. There were four, not just three. You know that his dad gave him information that was not quite 100% accurate. What am I supposed to do then? What do you think?
Who was the other one? Coolidge?
It was Taft, William
Taft.
Taft.
Yeah.
My thought here is, am I supposed to correct the student on the spot, or should I just let it go? Because questioning it would almost be questioning the validity or the questioning the position of his father in his mind.
I don't know how you could do it, but you could make it a class discussion.
Right, that's a good idea. Class discussion.
Just talk about the four and not
right.
bring it to a, you know,
right.
how you're wrong, you know,
right.
four, but just
mm-hmm.
say, hey, you know, how many, and ask your students if they know,
mm-hmm.
if we can get to the board.
Right. It's a good idea.
I see a difference in something like this, than if his dad would have said you should eat only organic hamburger.
What do you do then?
You're clear.
In something like this, I'm used to, even the teacher forgets things
right.
like that. And
right.
And if it wouldn't hurt to mention it, it doesn't have to be a big deal.
Right.
You could just say you might want to look up tabs.
Yeah. Because that will be something that comes up. There will be times when you hear a statement that you really don't agree with, and you have to decide whether you're right and you're going to prove that you're right, or whether mom and dad are right and you're going to just leave it at that for now. More on that.
You don't want to challenge their authority, but it's not, this to me doesn't sound like an authority issue. It just sounds like
Mm-hmm.
I think if you would, if the teacher comes through with an attitude about anything that they hear coming from the homes, and every time it says, no, it's not business like this, you know, there would be almost a attitude of superiority coming
right.
through.
Right.
Mm-hmm. And that's not good. It's
no, we have to avoid the superiority thing at all costs if we can. Okay, thank you for those responses. Now the next one, scenario 4. I, as a teacher, you probably feel this way too, but feel like there should be more to school than just book work. And I like to include things in the schedule that are not necessarily working with school books, but they're educational and helpful to the students. So we begin our year and we have these things inserted into the schedule at various places. Partway into the second month, I get a phone call from one of the fathers, and he tells me that his son is having a really hard time getting all his work done. And he really doesn't want his son bringing homework home because there's a lot of work to do at home. And he also has gotten wind of these extra things that we do in school that he doesn't feel are very necessary, when that time could better be used doing school work so that there isn't homework. And he's pretty adamant about this and feels pretty strongly about it. So I thank him and hang up. What should I do? Is it time to make an adjustment to the daily schedule? Or is it time to, yeah, what do you think? What's the appropriate response there? Maybe you've had this exact scenario happen. How did it work out? How did it work out? One of the students was upset about it?
Yeah.
Or? Okay.
And it didn't come directly to me, but anyway, he said, this is just really the problem, because at the end of the day, you've got work to finish up.
Right.
And his dad talked to me about it. Well, the kid, in a nutshell, the whole story was quite good. I didn't feel like. But what happened is, we were thinking at the end of the day instead of the beginning of the day.
Okay.
We used about the same amount of time,
right?
But to the boy, it looked like, you know,
yeah,
just can't get my work done.
Right.
Anyway, and the father was understanding
mm-hmm.
that. Well, that's the exact answer.
Yeah, that's. Well, one thing you said is the whole story wasn't going home, and if you can get your story mixed with the student's story and talk to the parents about it, tremendous how much misunderstanding and stuff that can fix.
We got something different that happened, but part of it was the student was not applying themselves.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it wouldn't have mattered what you would have taken out of the day, the student still wouldn't have gotten done.
Right.
Basically, whatever work he had to do, he just...
Right.
And the parent wanted subjects dropped and
mm-hmm.
whatever, and so subjects did get dropped, and it worked for...
Mm-hmm.
And they still had five homework just because they had left it.
Right.
But the whole thing of the child not applying himself, I wonder if it doesn't come back to sometimes like the scenario that you gave, was just given. If the parent thought it was too much for the child, mm-hmm. and then they dropped a few things, and then pretty soon he was at the same place as last year, it seems to me like there's a kind of parent problem there,
right.
along with the unmotivation
right.
on the child's part. That seems to be a delicate situation to work through. I understand that, but I think maybe that's where the board can step in
mm-hmm.
with the teacher's support and try to work with the parent to get him to
right.
see that, you know, if we take work away from him, we've proven that by taking work away it wasn't helping the problem.
Right.
It's almost an enablement or something.
Yes.
Probably, as far as whether to have these excursion days or not, it's probably something you should talk to your principal or talk to the school board or something and
mm-hmm.
see what direction they want you to go. I'd probably appeal to a higher authority
mm-hmm.
as far as
right.
vision for the school.
Right.
Yeah. Most students, it does help them in learning to have
mm-hmm.
those kind of days.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Doing something hands on or out of the
And it can be days or even things like having 15 minutes where we sing or 10 minutes where we read a book or even those kind of things sometimes come into question, like why do we need that in the school schedule because we're here to do the schoolwork.
Some of those extra things are definitely a benefit. I remember when I was in school and one of my teachers had us do reports, oral,
mm-hmm.
oral reports, and it was pretty regular, and it was in depth. And at the time, I got tired of it. It was,
right.
It was just not, and it seemed like there was lots of work to do. I think it was kind of over all the students that there was just seemed like there was a lot to do. And I think the teacher saw, I don't know how the teacher found out, I don't know if it goes to the board or what. And so he changed it a bit and
mm-hmm.
made so there was, it was easier for us. And I think that was probably
mm-hmm.
one of the best things to do.
Mm-hmm.
Because now looking back, I think I learned so much just from what that extra stuff, even if it was more.
Right. Right. Thank you. Next scenario. Coming up to the end of the year, I'm working on filling out report cards to get the students ready to move on to the next grade, and I come to the blank on the back of the report card that says so-and-so is assigned to, and I'm supposed to put a number there, whatever grade it's going to be. And I have a student that I've been struggling to keep up. She's been struggling with comprehension. We've been in contact with mom and dad, the school board, throughout the year. We've tried some things. Some things seem to help, some things don't. But we're at the end of the year, and we get together with the school board and the parents, and I feel pretty strongly that she should repeat the grade. The parents feel strongly that she shouldn't, and the school board's kind of treading a delicate line here, not sure what to think. How should I, as a teacher, respond to that? Maybe to get your mind started on this, I'll just tell, I had a 7th grade boy who struggled really much with reading comprehension, and that made everything hard for him in school because it bled over into all subjects. So this exact thing happened. We talked to mom and dad at the end of the year, and they were pretty sure they wanted him to go to 8th grade, and I wasn't so sure. However, we decided that we were going to have him read books throughout the summer. I think we said he was going to read 10 books. at least. And 8th grade went so much better for him than 7th grade did, and I'm not quite sure what all contributed to that. But right now, I feel like keeping him back would have probably not been the best thing, and I'm glad that we moved him ahead to 8th grade, even though that's not how I felt at the time. Thoughts on that?
We had that exact scenario a couple years ago with a student that it just seemed like math was really hard for her. And we started looking a little closer, and it really came down to the comprehension.
Mm-hmm.
She could read fast. I mean, she could read like everything, but she didn't comprehend. And we had we talked about the very thing. The teacher thought maybe we should keep it back, and parents didn't have a real strong opinion. The Liz board kind of did it, and we felt like we would give it one semester of the next year, and that problem totally went away. And I don't know what we did. I don't know what anybody did. And so
it's nice and
hard
to
know what to do in this situation.
Personally, I feel sometimes for a student, if they all of a sudden are realizing that, hey, this is serious and I may be repeating this grade, that sometimes is a prod that gets them started and they're willing to work a little harder.
Sometimes it's amazing what summer can do as well. Like, towards the end of the year, you're stuck.
Right.
So, that's just how we're going to make it next year and some of the difficult things.
Right.
But, seems like sometimes, especially while they're in 7th and 8th grade, they really grow up over the summer.
Right.
As teachers, our world gets kind of small sometimes, and we think the only thing that matters is
going
on right here in my class.
Right.
And I've found sometimes a hard way, but I feel like having the parent, doing what the parents feel is best for their child, is best for me in the long run.
Right.
To have a parent on my team.
Right. Yeah, that's one thing that did come through fairly strongly with my board and me in that. They just felt like we can't go against what the parents want. It's not going to work. And that I'm glad we did it that way. And more on that.
So would you have grades where A, B, C, D, F, and so forth, where the student would have got Fs in certain subjects?
It's happened, yeah.
Okay, so the one that you thought you should keep back, they have several Fs where they actually failed subjects.
It wasn't quite to that point with him. It was fairly low. Like, we'd use a percentage grade, not the letter grade, for our subjects, but it wasn't quite to that level, but it was relatively low.
Yeah.
Probably from the teacher's perspective, when it's so low, you feel like they're not really getting the potential, the full potential of what they could get.
Right.
They haven't been getting better.
Yeah, it hardly feels fair to the student because you're going to be forcing them through the whole way and just going to be a slog. One more. Actually, before I give this one, is there anything that you wanted to discuss, any scenarios that come to your mind from personal experience about relating to your board, relating to co-teachers, relating to parents, anything that you wanted to discuss?
So if I were to go to a school board meeting and I have this problem with a student, is it proper to mention the student by name to the board, or just say, I have a student who is struggling with this?
Is it proper to mention a student by name?
Because I've heard both ways.
Right.
I'm not quite exactly sure where I feel about it yet.
I would definitely tell who it was. Yes.
That's how we've always dealt with it. I'd be hard to work with something if you didn't know And it's not that we're interested in trying to humiliate someone in any way. It's the board is there when the teacher has a situation that they don't they need some advice on.
Mm-hmm.
We can give that, and it should be confidential anyway. That
right.
Shouldn't go home or go to anyone else. When we're dealing with an issue in school, it needs to stay in that parameter. And it, you know, unless it's the whole school,
right. Right.
The board may have knowledge of well, dyslexia runs in that family. It was something.
Yes, can have helpful things. Information about them.
Yeah.
Especially if you're in a new community where you don't know the people. Yeah. There's a lot of value in that.
How do you deal with students who are struggling? You're pretty sure they're struggling with academics because of lack of emotional security at home. It feels like it's all the parents' fault.
Right. And you know that when they go home, it's not fun. I mean, I don't know exactly what you're referring to, but. Not an easy thing to deal with. That's a real great way to answer the question. But I mean, the more consistent we can have our classrooms, the more they're going to find that security at school, whether they're coming from that scenario or that scenario. And children need that and want that, seek that. So thank you for your responses. One more verse says, "Obey them that have the rule over you and submit yourselves, for they watch for your souls as they that must give account, that they may do it with joy and not with grief, for that is unprofitable for you." I know that's speaking to ministers, but I believe that we as teachers watch for the souls of our students in a sense. So God bless you as you weave the reality of board teachers, students. Thank you for being here.
Thanks, man.